Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to the next episode of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. Now you've come to the right place to see and hear some of the best true crime content that's available. This week's guest is an old friend, Tommy Golden. We worked together in Miami. Tommy worked with the Uniform Division of the U.S. Secret Service and then as a special agent with the Drug Enforcement Administration. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. Once again, I got to say thank you for listening and watching the Game of Crimes. If you haven't heard, I've started posting the video interviews on our guests on YouTube. You may see a couple of glitches here and there, and that applies to this week's episodes especially. Tommy was located in the mountains of West Virginia, my old stomping grounds, during this interview, and unfortunately, the Wi-Fi up there wasn't the strongest, but we still managed to capture the audio and most of the video. So if you see things jumping around a little bit, now you know why. And if you're watching this on YouTube, do me a favor and click on the subscribe button, the like button, and share the episodes with everyone you know. These actions are free, they only take you a second, and they really help promote the Game of Crimes. I know none of this would be possible without your support, and I do appreciate you giving me your time, believe me. If you're looking for even more content, check us out on patreon.com/gameofcrimes. There you'll find several bonus episodes each month to include a case of the month, a question and answer session, a crime-related movie review, stories about the stupid things criminals do, that's always a lot of fun, random surprises talking about current crime-related topics, and you even get early audio access to each week's interviews before they drop on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. You just never know what might pop up next. Come on over and see what you think. That's patreon.com/gameofcrimes. A quick disclaimer about Game of Crimes. This is a show about crime. We talk about bad people doing bad things, about bad people doing bad things to good people. I do take these stories seriously, but we do like to have some fun and explore the crazy things that criminals do. As I mentioned, this week's guest is Tom Golden, a good friend and a man who dedicated his professional career to serving the public. You'll hear about his time with the Uniform Division and the Secret Service. That's pretty cool, especially with what's going on now. And then we get into Tom's adventures as a DEA agent. And wait until you hear about the case that had him hiding in the swamps of the Everglades, of all places, waiting for the arrival of an airplane packed with hundreds of kilos of cocaine. Believe me, that was a true case of dedication to duty. And like so many of our other guests here on Game of Crimes, Tom continues to serve the public after retiring from DEA. He's a true American patriot in every sense of the word. But to hear Tommy's stories, you know what comes next, right? You got to get in, sit down, shut up, and hold on. Welcome back to the biggest, baddest, most dangerous game of all, the Game of Crimes. Hey, everybody. Here we go again. Welcome back to the next episode of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. Man, I've got an old-time friend and colleague with me today. Honored to have him on here. Tommy Golden, welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you, big fella.
I got to own up to this right now. Tommy, we did his interview about 2 weeks ago. You know, and every time I think I got this podcast stuff figured out, I do something stupid along the way, and the thing I forgot, and you know what? It just hit me right now. I probably ought to look at this right now, make sure I didn't make the same mistake again, and I didn't. Hey, look at us. What I did is I forgot to turn on the video recording. I only recorded audio. We're on YouTube now, but Tommy's gracious enough, and that's the thing about the brotherhood and sisterhood you hear me talk about. He's like, hey, I'm willing to do it again if you are. Right. So here we are. Tommy, can't thank you enough, man.
Pleasure, Steve.
It's a hoot to have you on here. And we had a lot of laughs last time and talked about things that we hadn't talked about in years or if at all. And
right,
we're going to talk about them again.
Absolutely.
So, But like we do every week is we have a special section called the Small Town Police Blotter. And at the request of some of our listeners, they said, hey, it'd be cool to get your guests to read some of these. So we've got what stories today coming to you from Pennsylvania and West Virginia. And Tommy's from Pennsylvania. You guys know I went to high school and college and I was a police officer in West Virginia. So we're doing some down-home stories today, Tommy. So I'm going to turn it over to you for the first one, brother.
Y'all ready for this one?
We're ready, man. Go.
Oh, it is classic, man. Here's the title. Prison for dope who fired 357 Magnum at green laser lights that were actually fireflies. So here we go. A Pennsylvania man who was high on bath salts when he opened fire on fireflies that he mistook for green laser lights has been sentenced to a maximum of 6 years in prison following a plea deal with prosecutors. So the story goes like this. Jesse Shields, 31, was arrested after he and his girlfriend broke into a Clinton County residence, claiming to have been attacked. She said there was something on his skin that was burning and asked the homeowner if he could use the shower. After disarming Shields, the homeowner allowed the intruder to use the bathroom. When cops arrived at the residence, Shields and Catherine McCloskey, 23, were taken into custody. Shields and McCloskey's are parents of a one-year-old child. During police questioning, the couple had been driving around in a truck when McCloskey started seeing green laser lights coming from the sky and was hearing voices. Shields added that he also began to see and hear the same, claiming that the truck began to shake.
Ooh.
Yeah, in an effort to scare off the pursuing laser lights, Shields said he used a .357 revolver to fire a warning shot. McCloskey told police that she and Shields started seeing a lot of green lights that are similar to fireflies, but they were not fireflies because they were blinking twice.
Oh, that's
Shields grabbed her father's handgun and fired the gun to scare whoever was messing with him. He was sentenced Monday after pleading guilty to felony weapon charges and criminal trespass. He was ordered to serve between 3 and 6 years behind bars. Shields' rap sheet includes convictions for narcotics distribution, theft, making terroristic threats, criminal mischief, and assault. McCloskey pled guilty in November to disorderly conduct and driving under the influence of a controlled substance. Sentenced to a maximum of 6 months in custody, McCloskey is currently locked up at the Muncie State Correctional Institute. Steve, it doesn't get more bizarre. However, we've seen this play out before.
Oh, yeah. The first thing I thought about is the very first thing you said, bath salts. Because that's if I was going to buy bath salts, which you put in your bath, that's the first thing I think of is just snort it, smoke it, ingest it. I don't even know how you use bath salts. Unbelievable. That's, right there's
the
a clue.
Measures that people take and the substances they ingest. It never amazes me. I've been to some of the stories up here in West by God, Virginia, but
the sad
you got
part
one,
about
don't you?
Oh, yeah. But the sad part about this is they've got a one-year-old child. I mean, it's funny to tell these stories, but wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary.
It's in the exposure of that one-year-old and it's the lack of responsibility that these people encounter when they're under these influences.
I think I told you last thing. The only thing I was
and
surprised.
Driving around.
Yeah. The only thing I was surprised about not hearing in that story is meth was not involved. Meth's involved in everything.
Yeah. At one point, they probably ingested quite a bit of that as well.
Well, that might be what he was distributing when he got caught for narcotics distribution. But all right. So we're going to head over to West Virginia now. This involves one of my favorite Mexican restaurants. And this is gourmet cooking when you go here. We're talking about Taco Bell. We got a West Virginia woman. Yeah. She's locked up for child abuse after allegedly socking her teenage son in the face because he ordered the wrong toppings on her Taco Bell burrito. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
This is a major event now. Loretta Lynn Armstrong, got to love that name, 48 years old. She's being held in lieu of $31,000 bond following her arrest Friday night at her home in the town of Milton. Population, 2,423. Salute. You remember that old show, Hee Haw?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, classic.
Morgan and I used to do that all the time when he was still on the show. Anyway, back to our story. According to a criminal complaint, a patrolman dispatched to the residence spotted the 6 foot, 240 pound Armstrong. Ooh, that's a lot of burritos right there.
6'2", 40.
Mm-hmm. Repeatedly, they found her repeatedly punching the 15-year-old boy. Armstrong and the child told officers that the confrontation was due to Armstrong's displeasure about the burrito her son brought home. Armstrong is charged with felony child abuse and three misdemeanors, including disorderly conduct and obstruction. I started to say construction. It's one of the days. Right? I haven't finished my first coffee yet. According to police, Armstrong struggled with officers trying to handcuff her. There's a surprise. And you know what? And that wasn't enough. She threatened the cops.
Wow. So
the Milton Police Department officer, who was the first to arrive at Armstrong's home, told a local TV station, "There's no sense in ever getting involved in an argument like that over a burrito. Just let it go."
All right.
I told you this last time. The first thing that came to mind after I read this, this was Taco Bell, not Burger King. You can't have it your way. You got to go to Burger King if you want that. I thought it was terrible.
But you know what? What was that? 6'2", 40, 50 something?
That's a lot of woman there.
I'm reaching deep into my weapon belt trying to find something to, you know, neutralize something like that. With tacos. Well,
or maybe a taco.
To finish off that story, yo quiero Taco Bell.
Oh, senor. Yeah, man. Many more, I'm sure. You do these stories on a, you know, your cast. It's incredible. You know,
there's a we've got a Patreon subscriber channel also, and one of the monthly sections is you can't make this up. And it's there is no shortage of material, I'm telling you.
No, it's crazy. Sadly, and I suspect there'll be a lot more in the coming years too. So it'll be interesting.
It is kind of sad. So. Well, thank you for playing along on that, Tommy. It's I love these funny stories, and it's appropriate that you're from Pennsylvania. I'm from West Virginia, so we had to get that in there.
Yeah, you did you now? Yeah, well, now I'm living in West Virginia, though. So how about that?
You're an honorary. Well, you see, we've got a law in West Virginia. If you drive through the state, you're an honorary hillbilly. We're losing so many of our citizens there.
You know, not too long ago, I was with some of the guys on the mountain, and they brought up kind of that thing. They were having some of that shine, and you know, I took a little sip, and they're like, you know, part of the hood, and you know, the brotherhood, and the mountain hood, and you know, I was like, well, I'm happy to be a redneck. It's cool, man. These guys, mm-hmm. these guys are survivors. I'll tell you, they can live off the land, and they know what they're doing up here.
I was talking about that with somebody yesterday, Wayne Stinnett out in Oklahoma, and he was talking. There was a female narc in Arkansas that we both knew. He knew her very well. I'd only met her at a conference. But she's 37 years old, had a 7-week-old baby, and passed away from an embolism, a blood clot, after having a child.
Oh, boy.
And I'm looking here real quick because I want to honor her memory here. He sent me the obituary page on her. So her name is, come on now, Lionette Thomas, beautiful young lady, had only been married for a year, 37 years old. Lionette, this is in your memory today. Just so sorry for what happened to you. And she was a bright spot. Considering the drug world and working as a narc, she was a bright spot in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll raise my glass tonight for Lionette.
Absolutely. Appreciate that, brother. Okay. So let's get over to Tommy here now. We're talking to a guy who has a lot of experience, everybody. He started out in the United States Secret Service in the Uniform Division. I think they kicked him out, so DEA picked him up.
It could have been a little truth to that.
No, I doubt it very seriously. But I got to pick on you when I can here.
Preemptive strikes.
And in 1987, we both got hired by DEA, and we ended up, you were in class 55, is that right?
That's right, Steve, yep.
And I was a 53, so we were actually in the academy. This is when we had five classes going on at the same time at the FBI Academy, which, you know, we dubbed it the DEA Academy, but it was our property. Yeah. So we're just trying to, you know, we're trying to bring up their reputation a little bit by calling it the DEA Academy.
But probably did.
But there were so many. If you remember, we had five DEA classes. I think they had three or four FBI classes ongoing, and they had a state and local class in there, the National Academy.
Yeah, you know, FBI Academy, extremely busy in the day, as I guess it is now. But now we have our own identity with our own academy. But in that day, man, I remember it was you or maybe one of your partners came and talked to our class. As you guys being the seniors leading the way there at Quantico.
But yeah, we've been there like 3 or 4 weeks.
It was good to hear from you guys, though, just to get a little, you know, peek at what was ahead for us. It was nice to hear, you know, recruits that were senior.
I appreciate that, brother. What Tommy's talking about is in the academy when they have classes going in, as a new class comes in, they'll have two basic, we call them BATs, basic agent trainees, to come and to speak to the new class coming in. And it's just to answer any questions they have. I think my big words of advice were, while you're here, do everything they tell you, do it how they tell you to do it, do it when they tell you to do it. Once you get your badge and credentials, you can tell them to kiss your butt if that's what you want to do. But while you're here, play their game, do everything right. It was real easy, but I remember there was a larger lady sitting on the front row of that class. And when we went to the Q&A, her question was, how serious are they about PT here, physical training? And I was looking at my buddy, and we kind of thought, well, if you're asking that question, you're probably not going to be here very long. And she didn't make it through the first week. She failed her first PT test.
I don't think that was our class then, Steve, but valuable advice. Said a little too late. You know, I'm sure she did wash out.
Yeah, and I don't know if they recycled her or not. They probably did. Give her an opportunity to go home and get in shape. But I'm telling you, I'm not sure a recycle would have been enough time for her to get in shape.
Now, as I remember those days, if you didn't come to the academy in shape, they weren't going to get you in shape there. You need to come in decent shape. I mean, you'll get a little bit better, but you're not going to get much. So you better be rocking and rolling on day one.
Yep. So anyway, when we graduated the academy, I got to Miami in early November of 87. I think you got there shortly after that. And we ended up in Enforcement Group 10, which was a brand new enforcement group. We had four senior agents and, we had seven or eight new guys.
Run there. A great combination between, you know, you were probably one of the senior new guys. And I remember one, Kenny Peterson, would refer to us as baby shitbird agents, which was kind of like a badge of honor because he taught you well. But yeah, the senior guys and the young guys was a great mix.
Yeah, I got to give Kenny his due. He was none of us wanted to work with him because he would bust your stones every single day. He had no mercy on anybody. But I learned more from him than anybody else on this job.
He was a great learner. And I'm kind of going to back up just a tad. Secret Service, when I went with them, the uniform division, and I was with them, I think, in 84 through 87, really regimented. You know, you had to hit your marks and, you know, a very structured academy. Mm-hmm. Secret Service had some phenomenal training. I mean, they were trained up in spite of what happened in Butler, but they really did a fantastic job down there in Glencoe, Georgia, and then their own academy in Beltsville. But it was really regimented, and, you know, to me, that was great. I like that. But never forget, it was Nancy Reagan on the south grounds of the White House to just say no in Ricky Camarena's story that inspired me to do the DEA application. And when I went through Glencoe, I saw DEA training there as I was there with the uniform division. The DEA guys were, you know, 24/7, and we were kind of at the beach, you know, kind of laying out on the weekends, and I'm watching these guys hustling. And I'm thinking, man, I wouldn't mind being part of that bigger picture. And Secret Service uniforms, phenomenal outfit, but DEA was a real good fit at that particular time for me.
Just a quick story about Butler, not to get off track here, but when former President Trump was shot in the ear there, the big agent that was there, that his face is very prominent on the screen now, that was, and I'm not mentioning his name, I'm not going to embarrass the guy, but he was my neighbor across the street when we still lived in Northern Virginia there. He's a super guy, man. His wife's former FBI. I think her dad's retired FBI agent. Just a phenomenal guy.
Just from my perspective on seeing that, he did his job.
Yeah.
Unlike some others on the video, but that's a tough one, Steve. And to know somebody, as you just mentioned, that hits home. And, you know, there's some great folks over there on the agent side. And, you know, but, you know, obviously something went very awry. I think that was pretty much an epic failure there. But,
yeah,
that's their gig. Hopefully they can fix it. And I think they will.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a failure to communication. What we have here is a failure to communicate.
Yeah, but my days at the uniform division were avoided. There was a lot of coverage at rallies like that. They'd have uniform division guys out there by, you know, the dozens. And I did a lot of traveling on it, and I reflected back as I saw that event, and still got some buddies over there and speak to them occasionally and, you know, fight each other a little bit on some of the things we see in the press. But it is what it is, and I think, you know, by and large, you know, everybody tries to do the best they can. Unfortunately, that day it wasn't that a great day for them.
Yeah, that thing. And that's kind of the law enforcement culture where you pick on each other. We don't talk to each other for years and years. We pick each other. That's just the way it is. There's no hard feelings. There's nothing derogatory meant by it. But you also, it kind of jars your memory and gets you start thinking about things. And we can, I mean, we used to do this in a bar. Now we do it outside a bar where we solve the problems of the world, don't we? We used to do ops plans on bar napkins.
We got all the solutions to all the problems. And a lot of people ask me, and I think you may have at one point, you know, why go to the agent side? And it just never, it never interests me, to be honest with you. I thought DEA was the fit, and I did put all my eggs in one basket when I applied with DEA. I did look at ATF. I did look at the Marshal Service, but it was DEA, and I suspect you probably had that same, you know, drive that that was your niche and that was the fit. And you know, absolutely. I never looked back. And then get, you know, go through the academy, and you're a couple classes ahead of me, and you graduate before me. I'll never forget when I did graduate in Miami like you, but I was stopped in the parking lot by two grade 15s ASACs, and they said they were going to keep me back on that Jackie Lard homicide, the agent's wife that was killed on Route 610 there in Quantico. And I stayed behind, and I was like the gopher guy, and any call or any anonymous call that came in, I did all the fingerprinting because there was supposedly, and there was a fingerprint smudge at the crime scene. And I printed probably 50, 100, maybe 200 people. And but ultimately, they solved that case, I guess, a cold case unit from Fredericksburg PD or just
not long ago. Yeah, we actually, when Morgan was still on here with me as a co-host, we actually did a on our Patreon subscriber channel. We have a monthly episode. It's called The Case of the Month. And we did a section on Ron Lard on solving that murder, on the murder of his wife. So it's all good, man. It's all good. Hey, guys, we had just a little technical difficulty there, but we got us back now. And, Tommy, I want to ask you, just tell us a little bit about your background. I know you're a Pennsylvania boy, so tell us about growing up there and all the fun you had in the wonderful Pennsylvania state.
For sure, bro. Listen, man, does the Steel City or City of Champions ring a bell to anybody out there? That would be Pittsburgh. Yeah. That's where I grew up at, man. Blue-collar area. I'm one of seven kids. I'm the youngest. I got five sisters. Whew. They're older than me, and I got an older brother. So, you know, when it came to eat dinner and, you know, we got down for supper, as they would say, there wasn't much pickings on that table. But both my parents worked. My dad was a roofer for the city. And my mom actually worked for the City of Pittsburgh Police Department. She was one of the chief secretaries. And, yeah, she was strict. But we had what I think was a typical upbringing, you know, a little bit of school, the hard knocks, a lot of sports. Me and my brother played baseball quite a bit. He was really good. So I had nice footsteps to follow. Went to a Catholic high school, you know, coat and tie. I don't know how my folks afforded that. From the public grade school to the private high school, and then did the college thing. And I'll be honest with you, my first semester in college, boy, you could just pretty much wipe that one out. That's something that I'm not too proud about, but I'll speak to it a little bit. Yeah. I started out a little bit on academic probation, and just when I got off of that, I got put on disciplinary probation because I got into it with one of the RAs, and you don't mess with a resident assistant. And I did, and it ended good for me, but not in the long run. But at any rate, you know, I was able to make it through that. But that's, you know, that's adversity, and, you know, that's what gets you through things. But Pittsburgh was good. I still go back to Pittsburgh. Got some good friends that I still correspond with. I got the high school reunion coming up, and had a classmate in high school, and you know it, I know it, and he and I became friends, and I actually got a good opportunity to introduce you and some others to him. But we had a good run up there in Pittsburgh, and it's only about 2 hours from where I'm living at now, so I get to go up every now and then.
Well, you can't mention that guy and not tell us his name, because I know who you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, it was kind of interesting. When I got assigned to Miami, I was like, you know, the only one I really knew in Miami was Dan Marino of the Dolphins. And Danny and I were classmates at Central Catholic in Pittsburgh. And not that, you know, you name drop, but, yeah, it was kind of cool. Danny was a heck of an athlete. I'll tell you, his junior, senior year, there was coaches from everywhere coming in. You know, Joe Paterno came in quite a bit from Penn State, Jackie Sherrill from Pitt. And Danny went to Pitt, and then – thinking that, like everybody else, maybe he'd get drafted by the Steelers. But Don Shula took him, and I think it was a real good move. But Danny had a lot of success in Miami, you know, kind of Mr. Miami. But we had a good run, and getting a chance to have him meet some of the DEA agents that I worked with, and taking you over to to camp, and Kevin Stevens, Big Kevin, mm-hmm. We had a nice visit over there, and it was good morale builder for us, and, you know, just kind of getting away from the grind of the streets of Miami. But, yeah, he was one of my classmates, and there's several others that are pretty good popular guys up there that are, you know, attorneys and judges and things like that. That high school breeded, you know, some really successful guys.
Well, what a standout. He was and I remember you made some phone calls, and when they were doing their spring training, I think it was St. Thomas College campus or University campus, we'd go over, and not only did we go watch, we got to go – he had us passes so we could go on the sidelines there and stand with some of the people, and the coaches would come over and meet us. And I remember afterwards, Danny would always – when he finished practice, everybody's heading to the locker room, and they've been sweating their butts off out there, and he took time to sit down. There was a picnic table outside. We'd sit there and shoot the breeze a little bit. He was always giving us stuff. He was giving us T-shirts. I brought Dolphin footballs over one time, and he autographed them for my two sons. I mean, just what a stand-up guy.
Yeah, he was. And you know, you mentioned we got that open access through the security guy who was a Dade County sergeant. And Danny, you know, hooked it all up with Coach Shula. And I'll never forget the day. I think it was me, you, Kevin, and we were over there. And Shula, like, kind of whispered to me, you know, because I said, you know, these are my brothers, you know, with DEA and Agent Murphy, Agent Stevens, and he goes, "You guys aren't looking at any of my guys, are you?" And I was like, no, man, we're just coming here to see Dan. And you're right, afterwards, they had a nice little spread. And Danny always spent time, and very engaging. And to this day, you know, we still communicate. I still send him some things to sign occasionally. Mm-hmm. He's been super. His wife, Claire, awesome. You know, we had a good relationship. We weren't real close friends in high school until I went down to Miami and kind of on a whim invited him to the Camarena golf tournament. And I get to his guard shack and give the application to the guard. I didn't realize he was in that guarded community. And sure enough, the guard calls up to the house and he says, "Mr. Marino wants to talk to you." And I'm like, oh man, I interrupted his morning or whatnot. And I got up to the house and he was standing there, and he said, "Look up, come on in, Tommy, have some breakfast. Me and Claire, let me introduce you to my wife." And it was really cool, you know. It's comforting, and you know, we had a good run. We still are friends today, and you know, I'll talk to him occasionally.
Yeah, I've still got the picture. We got the three of us there. That's after Kevin had been shot. So we got the picture of the three of us with Marino and Don Shula there. And,
yeah.
And Kevin's got his injured arm. I think he's got it hidden behind somebody. You couldn't see it there, but Shula, I was standing next to Coach Shula, and he stood there with his hand on my butt the whole time. I was a little,
I didn't know that. Now? Oh, boy. Yeah. You know, I think his kids, Coach, and I thought I saw something the other day, got the same nose. You know, it looks very similar. But, yeah, being from Pittsburgh and, you know, Western Pennsylvania, you know, you had a lot of good athletes come out of that area, and I enjoy it. I like to go back there. I just went back and I visited the New Iron City Beer Brewery.
Oh.
You know, come on. Yeah, I went there, man. They had a nice store, and I picked up some product. And that's nostalgic there. And went down to Permanti's in the Strip District and did Woolley's Seafood. And we had a nice little visit, me and my wife. So it was a lot of fun to get back to the home community and neighborhood. And I worked at the Pittsburgh Zoo while I was in high school, and snow cones and, you know, did that gig. It was a lot of fun. We had a good time. We were growing up there in Pittsburgh, like anywhere else, you know, you make the most out of it.
Right. It was, and mentioned, so my first year in college, I went to West Virginia University, and we drank so much Iron City beer because it was the cheapest thing you could get your hands on. It tasted like iron.
Yeah, you know, vitamin I, baby.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
yeah.
I'd like to have all that money back.
Yeah. Yeah, I suspect I had that little Pittsburgh swag when I came into Group 10.
So now at the zoo, that's an interesting occupation there. So I think you live close to the zoo, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah. If you go to the Pittsburgh Zoo and you park in that big parking lot they got, and you take the escalator up, mm-hmm. the opposite of that escalator is where I grew up at, right up the hill. I could hear the lions and tigers at night.
Cool.
You know, now they modernized it. But when I worked there, you know, I pushed a snow cone cart, and, you know, I just started at the bottom and stayed at the bottom, basically.
Yeah.
But There was an ape named Molly, and I'll share this real quick story. And she loves snow cones. And people that were standing there looking at Molly, they didn't know that. So I'd walk behind them, and I'd say, Molly, want a snow cone? And if you didn't give her a snow cone, she's going to throw all her buckets at the bars. So these people didn't realize that. And, you know, I knew, here it comes, because I didn't give her the snow cone. And shame on me. But I gave her more snow cones than I didn't.
Yeah,
but she would throw all her nonsense, and these people would get shellacked. And you know, you kind of reeled for a little bit of fun when you were at that age, and we had some fun doing that. Poor Molly, but she was huge. If she got a hold of us, look out!
You didn't get fired from that job.
We had a good time.
You didn't get fired from that job, did you?
You didn't get fired.
Come on.
No. We were cool. Everything went well. Yeah. It was good. Man. It was a good summer job.
Yeah.
Then it was back to college.
So did you go to Pitt?
No.
I actually went to a college north of Pittsburgh, Edinburgh. I think now it's called University of Edinburgh or Edinburgh University of Pennsylvania. But I'm going up there in October for their homecoming. My brother just built a house on the lake up there, but I'll go up there. I did 4 years there and got the undergrad, and then I got my graduate degree when I was at Quantico. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that later, when I was assigned mm-hmm. there as an instructor. University of Virginia came and pretty much did that for 2 years. But Edinburgh was good. Edinburgh was a small college, but they're hurting up that way now. You know, it's tough filling the seats, I guess, from what I've been hearing.
Yeah. It's what'd you major in?
Criminal justice. I actually majored in criminal justice. I started out in accounting. I love numbers. You know, 1 + 1 = 2, 2 + 2 = 4. You know, there's an exact, result. And but I wasn't doing good in accounting. I was doing way better in a criminal justice elective. So I transferred over to criminal justice, and that's where I ended my college days up there, is with a bachelor in criminal justice.
Yeah,
so it was good. It was one of the instructors. Best instructor up there was a retired FBI guy, and he was really good. His name was Jim Fisher, real, real good instructor. I took him for almost every class he taught, and he was spot on. Yeah, real good guy.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Well, that's, I can remember back going in college in the criminal justice field, the instructors that you had that had actually done the job, it seemed like you had just had more respect for them. And it's not doing away, I'm not taking anything away from the academic instructors. You know, they're just as smart as anybody else. But when you talk to somebody that's been on the street and done it, that's the guy you kind of want to follow after.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there was a couple other instructors, like you said, they were scholars and academiacs, and they were good. But to have that mixture of a good instructor that's actually been there and done it, I think you can't put a price on that. And I've done a little lectures at George Mason in D.C., and I hope it went across like that as well. Mm-hmm. You know, blending the experience with the knowledge, I think that's key.
So when you came out of college, did you have an idea of where you wanted to go? Did you want to go state, local, federal? What did you want to do?
Steve, I was sold on Pennsylvania State Police. That was like kind of one of my goals. But sure enough, the Secret Service was testing, and they were hiring. They were mm-hmm. the uniform division. They were hiring. So I took the test, and within 6 months, I'm good to go. And I'm down there in Glencoe. So, I jumped in the federal side real quick, and it was a good move. The Secret Service uniform, like I said earlier, was a heck of a start and a heck of a finish for some guys. But getting to see the other agencies and starting to talk to other, uniform division guys who are putting in for this and that. And when I saw DEA down at Glencoe, that was it.
Yeah.
That was definitely it. It was a good fit.
I tell you what, man, that Pennsylvania State Police is a very proud organization, very talented organization. I've met several of those guys speaking at different conferences through the years. And it was several months ago. Remember that prisoner that escaped from the jail up there that kind of wedged himself between the walls and climbed up, and then he was a fugitive there for a couple weeks. And
in the woods and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So I got a call from Fox or News. I think it was Fox wanted me to talk about that on one of their news shows. And so I called the head of the Pennsylvania Narcotics Officers Association. He knew the colonel that was all over the television, or he might have been lieutenant colonel that was doing all the announcements, and he was the face of the Pennsylvania State Police. And he connected me with him, and I told him, I said, look, I'm going to be on Fox. I'll only be on there for a minute or two, but this is about portraying you guys. I want the world to know what you're doing, what's actually going on. And he was very gracious. He was no messing around. He was all about business, but he put it out. He's like, Murph, here's what it is. This is where we are. This is what we expect. And I reported that on there, and I have the utmost respect for those folks up there. They did a hell of a job.
Yeah, I even down here in West Virginia, the state police, they don't mess around. I mean, they're usually by themselves on patrol, and they're handling their business in a capacity that, you know, sometimes will take a team of agents, and they're one guy, one situation, and getting through it. So, I enjoy my interaction with the state troopers, and down there in Florida when we did with FHP, the Highway Patrol with Florida, they were cool too.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because just yesterday, so we're recording this on a Tuesday, August 13th, and I think this will probably come out about a week from now. And Javier and I went over to speak to the National Motor Vehicle Criminal Interdiction Conference. And this was it was mostly troopers from around the state, but there's also some local PDs there, met some Georgia troopers, but there were a ton of FHPs guys there. And I just enjoyed talking to them. They loaded me up with different stuff there. I'm going to show you a couple things here. This one, Kentucky State Police was well represented. They gave me a patch.
Beautiful.
And a young man from Fisher, Indiana, that he gave me a patch. And just, you know, giving these guys recognition because enjoyed meeting them so much. Now, this guy from Picayune, Mississippi. I never heard of it, but he was gracious enough to give me a coin from his police department. He's proud of it.
Nice.
I was
nice,
proud to know him, and you can see on the backside there, he's got his badge from Picayune, Mississippi. And we got the Louisiana State Police were there. Good people. I'm not kidding you, man. Everybody has a good time with these folks.
Wow.
This is a really cool one here, the Idaho State Police. Let me see if I can hold this up there and get it right.
That's unique, man. I'll tell you.
I bet I've got over 300 challenge coins. I've never seen one like this with those badges. You see the gladiator helmet on the backside there. Who else we got?
That's cool, brother.
Houston Haida. They were represented there.
Houston Haida.
Yeah, that's so Mike McDaniel is the boss down there. We do a lot of work with him. And then, of course, I saved what I think is the best for last.
Uh-oh.
Atlanta, the special response team. This is their patch.
Wow.
So he was a Riverdale police officer there outside of Atlanta, and took care of me with all of these. Another
fantastic
challenge coin. I love these challenge coins, man. He's got the breathing mask on the head of a skull.
And the flames coming out.
Yep. One more here. We'll get back to the interview. But it's
that's cool.
The guys that give me these, they don't have to. I don't ask for them. They just offer them up out of respect. I can't tell
Class
you how much acts. I appreciate it. Dan Salters, you remember Dan? He's still the head.
Yeah.
He's the head of the Atlanta Carolinas Haida down there.
Dan was a very gracious and kind guy.
Still is.
He let things roll off his shoulders and, you know, didn't micromanage. I worked for Dan. I think it was the ASAC at the Academy for a little bit when I was up there. But speaking of gifts like that, and you giving your presentations, and you give certainly a whole heck of a lot more than I do. I just gave one in Tennessee about five months ago, and I was getting a few things like that. They were giving me more Jack Daniels, though, in Tennessee.
What's Tennessee, man?
But somebody caught wind that I knew Marino, and you know they were asking me about him and if I could get some things signed. And I said, well, listen, y'all put your name in a box. I'll draw a name, or somebody'll draw a name, and I will get the ball, and I'll get Danny signed something. So this lieutenant, he wins, and what he wants on the ball it was something about Danny's movie with one of a pet detective, I think, or Laces Out or something. And I was like, I don't know if Danny's going to sign it like that. But, you know, I put it on the ball. Hey, Danny, can you do this? Sure enough, man, Danny did it exactly like the guy wanted it. And I was like, golly. And it got, I think they were surprised I actually, you know, followed through. You know, maybe they were thinking I was blowing some smoke, which I wasn't. Uh-huh. But, yeah, you know, that interaction, you know, between the challenge coin, a T-shirt, and, you know, if I can offer something signed by Danny or something, you know, from Pittsburgh or something like that, it just goes a long ways, man.
It does.
Like you said, you know, the respect and the honor. It's cool to get stuff like that. I have a nice little coin collection up at our bar, and it's pretty nice, you know. There's some really cool military coins. Woo,
yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, they are. It's and especially when I was still on the job, you know, my position, I was meeting with, you know, you meet with generals from the military, and they have their own personal coin, and that's an honor to get one of those. I've got a few of those laying around here. It's I just love it, man. And see what you're doing there. Even though you're retired, you're was it the Tennessee Narcotics Officer Association? Is that what you went to?
Yeah. Yep. Yes, it was.
So you're even though you're retired. You're still selling the brand of DEA because they're looking at you like, well, hell, who's another Fed? What's he going to tell us about? But then they find out that, you know, you come in with no attitude. You just you're part of the brotherhood and sisterhood there, and you end up leaving with a lot of new friends. I love it.
Yeah, I always enjoy giving something back. You know, we've had good runs, and we can, you know, we're going to get into Group 10, but you know, we had really good run, and you know, the path you took, a lot of the guys, including me, were very proud of your accomplishments, not to blow smoke, but we were watching. We said, yeah, Murph's going to go because you could write and you had some wonderful cases. I mean, big cases, and you could talk. I mean, you had the trifecta. You had good cases, and we had a good run.
Some people say when you can talk, that just translates to you can bullshit. That's probably more true.
Well, I don't want to say anything. We got pretty good at that too.
Well, now we get
to Group 10, and my gosh, that was my very first group with DEA in Miami, and I think I might have mentioned to some people not how I got to Group 10 is a little bit of a story all in itself. I mean, when I got held back at the academy, I'm anxious to go where I want to go, you know, down in Miami. So I'm calling down there, hey, where am I going, you know? So somebody said, talk to the duty agent. So the duty agent at that particular time was Jeff Booty.
Oh, no kidding.
And I get Jeff, and I talked to Jeff. I said, Jeff, man, this is Tom Golden up at the academy. I'm going down to Miami. You got any idea what group I'm going to? Because all the other guys are landed. They're already, you know, hitting the ground running in the BA-55. And he goes, you're going to go to Group 9. And I said, really? I said, what's that like? He said, don't bring your handcuffs. It's the Noriega group. They're just putting together intel, this, that, and the other. I said, oh, all right, you know, I'm cool. You know, I'm just happy to be a DEA agent at that point in time. So I get down there. First day, coat and tie. I come in, and I see Lionel Stewart, the associate SAC. Mm-hmm. And he's going to take me to the group. Group 9 is on the third floor. Group 10 is on the second floor. We get on the elevator at the first floor. And he gets distracted. I think it was Brenda Siebel. Attractive lady. She gets on and he's yakking it up with her. Now Lionel presses 3. She presses 2. And I'm standing there and I'm just minding my own business. They're yakking it up. And I could tell he's starry eyed and, you know, you can tell the look in his eyes. So she gets
he's hitting on her.
Yeah. She gets off on the second floor and he gets off yakking too. And he just points and says, there's your unit right there. And I saw this big golden 10. In front of the door. Mm-hmm. Doors open. I walk in. I think it was Kevin O'Brien. You might have been there. So y'all just seized 400 and some kilos of cocaine. And Frank Cellino came out of his door. He was the group supervisor. And I said, sir, I'm reporting the duty. He said, oh, good, good. I think he was surprised.
Yeah.
He goes, just go with that agent there, Kevin O'Brien. Put 5 kilos in a box. He'll show you how to wrap it. Make sure you sign it. So that's what I did, and I stayed in Group 10. And, I never said anything. I was like, maybe this is how it works, you know. I was very, very happy. And, you know, Kevin and Jeff and Kevin Stevens, Lynn Piper, you, Roland Thibault, Pete Sarin, Gene Francoeur. I can name all. Kenny Peterson.
Yep.
It was just an amazing time at that particular point. We're down there, you know, in the heyday, and we had some cool cases, you know.
We did.
It was good, man.
Before you came in that day, had you ever seen a kilo of Coke?
No.
Me
only
either.
up at the Academy on a slide. You know, I was like, hey, it looks like a cigar box, you know. That's what they all kept saying. And I walked in, and not only did I see it, you know, you smelled it, you know, you're like, now you'll never, you know, forget that smell, and you'll know it now from day one. But yeah, bro, it was, I don't know whose case. I think it was Gene Francoeur, maybe you and Gene.
That was a biggie. That was Gene's case. It was, that was my first undercover. I got to go down to Turks and Caicos Islands on an undercover boat. You probably already know this, but just in case you don't, when I joined DEA, I'd been a cop for 12 years. The most powder coke I'd ever seen was 2 ounces, a baggie about like this. And now in my first case of DEA, that it's not my case, it's Gene's case, 400 kilos.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be the first to tell you, I was addicted to cocaine at that time, just a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think we've worked anything much less or, you know, anything less than that. I mean, it seems like it were coming in 500 keys at a time.
It was wild. It was, somebody hit a lick there one time that was it 1,000 kilos? One of the guys, was it Booty or?
Booty had a nice one on Key Biscayne, him and Kevin O. Kevin had a good one down there. And I don't know where he was at, Jamaica or somewhere. Mm-hmm. But we all seemed to hit a couple nice loads, you know, working with Customs, Woody Kirk's guys over there. Yep. But,
Woody
man, it was a good, yeah.
I had not heard that name in years and years and years. That was, and that was the Customs group.
Yeah. I did, I think, 2 loads with them off the Miami River Jones Shipping Yard. And, you know, you talk about communications, boy, you know, you're working with another agency and you just got to make sure, you know, you covering your back because they're definitely covering theirs. And we had a good run with them, too.
We actually did. That was, in fact, my first case as a case agent was working with Pat O'Leave from the Customs Group.
Oh, yeah, Pat.
And they had an informant, had a coastal freighter, brought up 500 keys of coke from Haiti. We brought it in the river, did the controlled delivery. We actually did the controlled delivery on a Saturday. And it was, if you remember, it was raining. It was a mess out there.
I do remember that. Yeah, I actually got a picture. And if I could bring it up, I'm pretty sure it was that case. I think, I don't know if we went to Hialeah with some of that or where we went with. It went to a house.
Yeah, it did. And on the way to the house, though, if you remember, they stopped and they peeled off like 5 or 10 keys. They were skimming off the load.
Oh.
So now, and then, of course, you know, we had to split surveillance then because you can't let the dope walk. It was just a little wild sometimes.
Yeah, when you try to follow those loads, we're about maybe 2-3 actions, and then we got to, you know, I don't want to give up. And who we use to do, you know,
right.
Walling offs and things like that. But it was great. That was good run.
I had a blast down there with those guys. I want to back up just to Secret Service for a second. Did you ever think about becoming an agent for the Secret Service, the plainclothes protection guys?
Nah, I thought they did a good job. Actually, I thought they did a great job. I never really looked at it that way. I liked the uniform, to be honest with you. I was on a motorcycle. Uniform division had the dogs. Uniform division has the counter snipers. They don't get a lot of credit that they deserve. It wasn't a good fit for me. Could I have? I suspect so. Yeah. I think any one of us, you know, you had your degree or whatnot, you could have went anywhere, you know, FBI or ATF, DEA, Secret Service agent. I was glad I didn't. There was a time in Miami and I knew an agent, Secret Service agent who was in uniform division, and I called him up to go to lunch one day, and, I could hear him on the phone asking his partner, am I allowed to take a DEA agent to lunch in my G car? And I was like, man, I'm glad I didn't go that route. You know, I'm glad I'm over here with DEA because I didn't have to ask anybody that question that we were going.
Oh,
you know, I actually said, and I said, look, man, I'll come get you. You don't have to worry about, you know. Yeah, it was a little bit strange, but he was a really good guy too. They like I said, man, they do their job very well. And unfortunately, they're under a lot of heat some of it self-initiated, but yeah, you know,
things happen.
Hopefully they'll survive that. Yes. But no, I never really gave it much consideration to go as an agent there.
Now, with your family, with all the siblings you have, are you the only one that went into law enforcement?
Great freaking question, brother. Yeah. They're all teachers, and they're good at it. I mean, everybody in the family, and we come from nothing, brother. I mean, we had one bathroom in that house, and I think we got two PhDs or one PhD, bunch of masters. Everybody's got their degree, and I think my sister finished hers up a few years back. She was the last to get through it, and she was, you know, working full-time. I think she was with the VAs. Give her a lot of credit. My brother, he's a doctor in education, and he just retired. Dan, I think everybody's retired, but they're all, you know, they're all up there living their own lives, and we visit occasionally. But I was the only one, and my dad, I'm sure, was like proud on one side, but like, what's up with this? and my mom too, maybe she was like that. But yeah, when I left the Secret Service, by the way, getting back to that, they were like, why would you leave that? And I said, well, I'm going to go to DEA. And they really didn't have not a lot of people at that point in time had a lot of knowledge of DEA, unless you knew the law enforcement circle. But when they came to graduation, they got it. Jack Lon was our administrator. Yep. Yep. And he actually met with them personally afterwards. I had nothing to do with this. He just sees them in the parking lot. He spends like 20 minutes with them.
Wow.
And yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's why everybody loved Jack Lon, man. It was like he was part of the crew. I mean, that was an honor to get your badge from him.
Yeah, he was really, really good.
Fantastic.
You know, we had some good ones.
You know, and hearing that about you and your family, you know, it just shows that you had two grounded parents who wanted you to grow up to be independent, responsible adults who didn't want to have to take care of you people in your adulthood, which, you know, I mean, nowadays that's kind of common, it seems like. But hats off to your mom and dad, man. So super people taking care of business.
Yeah, they were tough. They were tough. But man, you know, there was no timeout in our that was never discussed. It was you got the boot up your arse,
yep.
or the belt came off or something. You know it, and you know you learned. You know, but it was good. It was cool. You look back, yeah, there were some tough times, but there were a lot of great times though.
That's what we said about our parents. Our parents, you know, my dad was a Southern Baptist minister, and it was just me and my sister, and he did not spare the rod. But you knew what was expected of you, and when you didn't live up to that expectation, you knew what the results of the consequences were going to be for a bad decision that you made.
Yeah, sure. You know, and he was there to pick me up when I was down, and that's when I needed him most. And when I was, you know, on a good high, or if I hit a home run or something, you know, he was cool, but I needed him more when I was down, and he was there, and so was my mom too. And my brother was a big an image in my life too. He's successful, and you know I always competed, and I wanted even more. Yeah. But son of a gun, he got his PhD, and I was going to try for it, but I was like, heck with it.
Hey, you got your master's; that's pretty good.
Yeah. UVA came right to the academy; it was great.
Well,
University
remember
Virginia.
I was when you remember when Kevin got shot in 1989? That's when FIU was coming over to the training division, and I think a couple nights a week they were giving master's classes, and I was working on my master's over there, and I was in my third class, and you went once a week, and it was 4-hour class after you'd work, you know, middle of the week, so you're working your shift, and then you got to go to class, and then you go home, you get home like 11 o'clock at night, and the instructor at this time was an assistant DA with Metro-Dade prosecutors. And when Kevin got shot, we went into work mode, just everything dropped, and we just focused on Kevin shooting at that point. And I went to the instructor and I said, look, I'm sorry, I got to drop class. This is what happened. And he said, now who's he to you? And I said, he's my partner. He said, all right, here's what you do. He said, you get the paper done for this class. I don't expect to see you in the class. Just get your paper done and submit it, and let's see what happens. And you know, I mean, because he was so gracious about it, I wanted to do a really good job, and I got an A out of it. But
excellent.
Never finished. I never followed through. Shame on me, you know. But now the funny thing is, I just got a call last week. FIU brings Javier and I down to speak to the students. So we're going down September 18th for our third time.
Awesome, brother.
I love it. I love it. It's just
that would have been very tough for you as a working agent. you know, and on top of the shooting, because, mm-hmm. you know, it was easy at the academy. We had a very structured schedule, so it was cool. Wednesday nights and then Saturdays. But, mm-hmm. yeah, to be out in the field and in the streets and doing and as busy as you guys and you were, yeah, that would have been tough. I can surely see how that would be an issue there, particularly with the shooting, too.
One of the other students in all my classes on those master's classes at nighttime was Omar Aliman. You know, we had a good time.
All right. You brought up the name. Yeah, I had worked with Omar. Omar could talk, boy. I'll tell you.
I know.
The Cuban pleasure machine. Omar was funny, man.
When I mean, we were pretty good friends because we were in class there together, and we were always, you know, if you went over to the drug lab and when you see made a seizure, the lab was right there in the same building as the training section, and so you're always seeing Omar. When I got selected for Columbia, he's like, "You're the wrong man. They should never picked you." I'm like, "What the hell? You know what's wrong, Omar? You're Spanish. You don't speak Spanish." And I said, "I'm going to learn." So we came back. He's like, he'd start talking to me in Spanish after I graduated. You know, got out of language school before I transferred. And he came up to me one day and he started jabbering. And I just looked at him and went, "Hola, y'all." He's like, "You freaking redneck, get out of here." It was hilarious. It was just good times.
Yeah, he had a lot of passion.
He had
a lot of passion for
some people didn't like him.
You know, I was okay with DEA too.
Yeah, he did. And
yeah.
You know what he was challenging me on? He said, you know, to go work in a country like that, you need to know the language already. You need to be a native speaker. And, you know, I think I proved him wrong. But to a degree, he was right. You know, you got to go study. And if you want to do the job right, you got to get involved.
Yeah, so. I spent about 2-3 years with him in training.
Yeah, we're going to get to that here in a second. But I want to step back one more time and ask you, while you were a bat in the academy, did you ever have to write any memos?
Yeah, Steve. But you got, like, somebody told you about our cat. Yeah, I think everybody did. I'll never forget it. Gary Wade was my class coordinator,
and
I got a great deal of respect for his tenacity. Mm-hmm. He come in one day, and my name – tag was ripped, you know, your paper name tags, and he nailed me for that. It was ripped. I wrote a, you know, just a nice crisp paragraph, you know, and that was, you know, I think it was all an act of just, you know, let's see how Tom will react to this. And and Gary was cool. I saw him make other people's write memos, and some for good reasons, some for reasons like that. But I'm sure one Steve Murphy probably had to write one as well for something.
No, I had to write two that I remember. the first was, we're out on the, I came to DEA. I was a railroad cop. I had been on their pistol team, their competition team for a couple of years. And we were traveling throughout the United States. I mean, we were competing against the U.S. Secret Service pistol team, which was one of the best in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we were beating them. Believe it or not, we were. And I was probably the worst shot on our team, but we were doing good. So anyway, you know, you get out there, and back then they were issuing Model 10 revolvers with fixed sights, and they put you on the 5-yard line, and they said, okay, you know, this is the end the bullet comes out of. Don't ever point it at yourself or anybody else. And, okay, load up 6 rounds. Now slow fire from 5 yards. Try to hit that piece of paper in front of you. So I fired 6 rounds, and I had one hole, basically. And then the instructor comes over and he said, "What is this?" I said, "Well, you said shoot 6 rounds at the target." So I did. He said, "I only count one hole." He said, "If I was grading this, you get credit for one shot." And the hole was bigger than normal. You know, it wasn't one little bullet hole.
Right.
And I'm like, "What the hell do you want me to do? I mean, that's called grouping." He said, "You do it our way." Okay. So the next time we do, I can do a couple shots here, a couple shots here, a couple here, a couple here. And then he's acting like, "Oh, now you're a smartass, aren't you?" I said, "What do you want me to do?"
You catch 22 right there, man.
Oh, man. And plus, you know, you've been a cop for 12 years. I'm thinking, who the hell are you to tell me how to shoot? But then he's like, he said, "I'm going to show you who I am. I want a memo. You know, explain yourself what you did up here on a memo." I'm like, okay, if that's what you want, that's what you want. And then
yeah,
the other one was a little more serious. we were doing our field training exercises, following around instructors and all those people. And we went up to the Potomac Mills Mall.
Okay.
Our bad guy parked up there, and so I've got the eye, and somebody called out, and said, you know, hey, Murph, go do a walk behind the car, see what you see in the car. So I got out, and I walked over, and in the floorboard of the passenger's front seat, I could see the scenario, the whole operation, you know, their outline.
Yeah.
And so I tried the door, and sure enough, it was open. So I sat down and jotted down a few notes, times, locations. We didn't lose anybody on that surveillance, so that night –
oh, man.
We get back in. It's probably 1 o'clock in the morning, you know. And you don't go to bed until you go to debrief. And so we're sitting there debriefing.
Those went forever.
And the instructors are saying, man, you guys did a fantastic job tonight. This is what we're trying to train you to do. You picked up on, we didn't think you had us. And you, lo and behold, you had us every time tonight. So that, you know, you guys are doing a great job. And I won't say the bat's name that was in my class. He's like, well, it's easy to do when you got the scenario written down. And of course, the instructors go, what?
Oh no!
Oh yeah. So, who had that? You know, and it's all about integrity. Do you just raise your hand? I said I did, sir. And I had to write a really long memo on that one. I thought I might have gotten booted out on that one, but
little barb, basic agent review board for one Steve Murphy.
Well, it didn't go that far.
I thought it was creative.
That's what I told him. I said you wanted me to take the initiative. I did.
You know.
So yeah, I said, well, hey, you know, if this was going to court, everything would get thrown out because of the fruits of the poisonous tree. But, hey, you know, anyway.
Yeah, man, those days, you know, resourceful creativity. And then, you know, we blended it all when we were down there in Group 10. And, boy, you had I'll never forget the one, that informant you had, Pilot.
Oh, yeah.
And that dang case we did. Man.
Hey, players, this is the end of part one. Part two comes out, as always, on Tuesday. In the meantime, Game of Crimes is now posting interview videos on YouTube. You can find those at Game of Crimes Podcast, and I ask that you click on the subscribe and like buttons. On social media, check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Game of Crimes Podcast, and on X at Game of Crimes. Also on Facebook, type in Game of Crimes fan page and join us for some fun. Our website is gameofcrimespodcast.com. We've got a lot more information there, including all our episodes, the book list, which contains the books written by our guests, Game of Crimes merchandise, and more. And for more content, join us on patreon.com/gameofcrimes. I have several monthly episodes that range from silly to serious, so come on over and join the fun. In the meantime, everyone stay safe. We'll see you tomorrow for part two.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.